Welcome to the Assembling Inclusion Podcast. On this show, we feature different programs, individuals, and initiatives focused on being more inclusive of individual needs. We invite you to learn right alongside us. If you want some additional resources or access to our courses, please visit our website or follow us on social media. But for right now, let's get right to the episode. Hello, listeners. It's hard to believe that it's been a full year since the Assembly Inclusion podcast launched. Since then, we've had an amazing 46 episodes showcasing disability inclusion around the world. I'm your host, Katie Nieves-Liquinco, and you're going to be stuck with me for the duration of today's episode. Welcome to our Season 1 anniversary recap. A few weeks ago, I was presenting an Ignite speech on the main stage at ISTE 23. My speech was called Lessons Learned from 50 Interviews on Disability and Inclusion. During that 5-minute speech, I recapped the interviews from that first year of the show, as well as other interviews that have been recorded but not yet published. I discussed the major themes that were interwoven through each and every episode, and that's the plan for today, except with a little more depth. We're going to reflect on this journey, including the conversations we've had, perspectives we've discovered, and lessons we've learned along the way. We'll also go into some updates from our guests, as well as a preview of the first part of the second season. Since August 2nd, 2022, we have published 46 episodes. We talked to people from across different fields and different regions. We've had people working in advocacy, technology, STEM, fitness, the arts, education, gaming, libraries, employment, and so many more. And we've had people from both inside and outside of the United States, including countries like Canada, Ireland, Spain, and Australia, just to name a few. Before we start, I want to say thank you to all of our guests from the first season for sharing their experiences and expertise. I'm so grateful for your willingness to take the time to share with all of us. And thank you to all of the listeners out there, whether you've just started listening or you've been with us since day one. So without further delay, sit back and relax as we review the lessons learned from Assembly Inclusion this past year. The first theme to emerge was the idea that in order to discuss disability, you need to include those who identify in that community within the conversation. I've been upfront from the very first preview of this show that I am not an expert. I worked as a special education teacher for the first part of my career, but I am in no way the voice that needed to be heard. That's why we have an interview format on this show. I want the guests' voices and experiences to shine. This idea was also true for many of our guests. The phrase, "nothing about us without us," was often repeated during these interviews. Every interview pretty much discussed the necessity and the requirement of having someone within the disability community there to make decisions and share their perspective. In our third episode, we talked to Allison Richard and Brittany Jacobs from the Burlington Public Library System in Iowa. When we talked to them, they were in the process of getting certified for their sensory inclusion initiatives. Their staff was trained, walkthroughs had been conducted to ensure accessibility of their spaces. They built quiet, calming spaces, and they collaborated with parents and community teachers to create programming and events. In this clip, Allison and Brittany discussed the importance of feedback when working on becoming more inclusive.
Allison, what are some of those specific questions that you put on the registration feedback?
One of them is, are there any specific accommodations that could help your child to participate in this program? Is there anything that staff can do to support you in your visit to the library? I think I asked like a food sensitivity or allergy question. But just incorporating those in all of our events, so across the board, to make it more, okay, this is something we are doing for every program on a regular basis.
This is just one example of something people can do to show they are being more accessible. By asking questions, the Burlington Public Library has shown that they are both accepting of people's individual needs and also take care to ensure that these needs are addressed in various aspects of the library. In the time since the interview was recorded, the Burlington Public Library has continued their sensory initiative, as well as continued to make strides toward inclusion within their locations. They have added additional items to their circulating collection, including more sensory bags, communication devices, and weighted blankets, just to name a few. They have also built a sensory space in the children's area that is more distant from the play area. The new space includes beanbag chairs, a darker nook, fidgets, calming devices, emotions posters, and a canopy to help put patrons at ease. I want to send a huge congratulations to Brittany and Allison at the Burlington Public Library for all the great work they've done and all the work they're continuing to do to make the library an inclusive and accepting space for everyone. Other episodes that have incorporated this theme include episode 13, where we talked about Salute, episode 18 with Jen Schlegel, episode 34 with Social Cipher, episode 44 with Wheel the World, and episode 25 with the Microsoft AI for Accessibility program. Each of these episodes showed the importance of authentic representation and ensuring that the voices of the disability community are heard and valued. Dr. Tara Mason addressed the significance of representation and authentic voices and experiences when we talked about the Disability Film Festival back in episode 7. This film festival, which has been around for several years, focuses on bringing awareness to inclusive education and celebrating it. The films use storytelling to share about equal access and inclusion and feature films created and produced around the world. In this clip, Dr. Mason discusses the use of authentic storytelling and experiences for the Disability Film Festival.
We have both documentary films and also narrative films where the actors might be telling a story of best places of inclusion. We look for films that are authentic, along with actors and crews on the film that are people with different abilities.
In the months since the Disability Film Festival episode launched, the fourth film festival has been planned. This festival will occur in the fall. The screening and selection times have changed as well due to the increased growth of the annual festival. Currently, there are 64 entries for this year. In addition, Dr. Mason has moved on to a new university. She currently works at UC Berkeley as a Universal Design for Learning consultant with the Center for Teaching and Learning. All of these episodes show, in their own way, the necessity of having someone at the table with a disability before a decision can be made, not assuming what someone needs and actually listening to their ideas and experiences and bringing them into the planning and implementation process. For our second theme, I need to defer to Shay Belsky from Mentra, who, in our 27th episode, said, quote, "If you've met one person that's neurodivergent, you've met one person." This statement really shows the importance of understanding that everyone is different and their needs are unique. Just because two people have the same disability does not mean they have the exact same needs, perspectives, and experiences. That's one thing that Mentra takes into consideration. Mentra is a neurodivergent talent platform looking to make employment and job searching more inclusive. In our interview, Shay offered advice on how workplaces can be more inclusive for neurodiverse employees.
The best thing you can do is look at the people who work in your company already and learn from them. Don't just ask for their advice, but make them stakeholders as part of this process and invite them to help understand what will make their experience more inclusive for the people who are already there. And then as you interview new people and bring them into your company, that will evolve naturally as a function of people who are there.
Within this theme, several other episodes stand out, including episode 40 with Snoozlin, episode 2 with Build a Better Book, episode 4 with Florio VR, episode 10 with Able Gamers, episode 21 with Viative, and episode 41 with Epic Players. Each of these episodes, in their own way, addresses the importance of ensuring that individual needs are considered and not making assumptions about what a person needs based on their disability. In our sixth episode, we talked to Robert James Gabriel from Helperbird, an all-in-one extension that provides personalized support on the web. Helperbird offers so many different tools within the Chrome extension. Users can pick and choose the supports that work for them. Helperbird doesn't assume that someone with a specific disability would need a specific accommodation or support. Instead, it provides a variety of accommodations and allows the user to decide on which supports work best for them. According to Robert James,
what Helperbird does and its mission is the ability to give every type of learner the tools they might need to unlock their full potential. And what does that actually mean? Some users love voice typing, but want the font to be in red. You can do that. If you want it to have word prediction in any language, you can do that with the background being green. You can mix and match over 42 different features to kind of personalize the web to your own needs and give everyone their full potential and make it an equal playing field. And there's text-to-speech with natural voices. Some people love them, some people hate them, but the option is there because there's no one solution for any difficulty. We try to give you the options to find the combination that works for yourself. And it works on every page under the sun, as long as it's in the browser.
In the time since the episode, Helper Bird has had some updates. The extension now offers 25 different features. They launched an iOS app for both iPad and iPhone users, which means that Apple users can now take advantage of Helper Bird's accessibility features on their devices. Helper Bird also introduced an exam mode, rebuilt docs, and support for math within their updates. If you want to check out more details about their updates or just stay in the know about what's coming out, go to helperbird.com. From each of these episodes, it's important to remember the importance of looking at people as individuals. Everyone's needs are different. Everyone's experiences and perspectives are different. Listen to what people say as opposed to making assumptions. It makes sense to really pair the first two themes together. Uplift and listen to the voices of the disability community and give them a seat at the table. And don't make assumptions about people's experiences. The third takeaway from this season seems obvious, but adapt the environment to the person and avoid forcing the person to adapt. Too often, people in the disability community are forced into a situation, physically, emotionally, socially, instead of accommodating their needs. In the world of education, accommodations refer to adjusting the environment, curriculum, or resources to allow an individual access to content and instructional activities. However, these accommodations span outside the realm of education. In our very first episode, we talked to Alex Dunn from Enabled Play. Enabled Play is a platform that helps anyone access and control their technology using voice commands, body gestures, facial expressions, tilt controls, and output options. While they initially started as a way to help people play video games, their uses have spread into other areas such as the workplace and the classroom. Here's what Alex had to say during our interview.
And that's why my angle with Enable Play in solving the problem is I'm not the only person out there building assistive tech. There's tons and tons of amazing people out there doing it. But my angle is a little bit different, I like to think anyway, which is that the tech should start to mold to you as the user rather than you having to figure out how to use it because it's built very rigidly. So it will learn your face and your face expressions, your body and your body gestures, and your voice and voice commands. And now folks are even using it for things like speech therapy and occupational therapy, even for nonverbal students who are able to sort of play games when they're going through their therapy sessions and practicing things.
In the time since our episode aired, Enabled Play has done so much. They're in the process of renaming. They raised $2.5 million in funding for their platform, and they are offering the platform completely free for educators with the hope of making technology more accessible for students. Given how beneficial their technologies have been with speech therapy and other educational outcomes, this is huge, and it'll be exciting to see where Enabled Play heads next. There are other episodes that have this centralized focus on making adaptations for the individual and not forcing the individual to adapt to a setting or situation. Episode 17 focused on the accessible Field of Dreams Park in New Jersey. Episode 5 focused on the adaptive iFit CrossFit program. Episode 16 focused on iHarp, where you can play music using iGaze. And episode 35 promoted the Disability Lab, which adapts makerspaces to be more inclusive for people's physical needs. And in episode 12, the Cedar Rapids Public Library addressed how they adapt programming for different spaces and accommodate different sensory needs within their library. The idea of adapting also comes into play within education. For example, episode 22 talked about Growing Hope, which creates a different career pathway for students. And in episode 26, we talked about Clusive, a tool to independently support students in reading in the classroom. In episode 20, we talked to Joanne Blumenfeld from Catalyst, who started the program. Catalyst is an award-winning high school program that provides STEM opportunities for students with disabilities and helps them get into the STEM workforce in the future. In this program, instead of forcing the students to adapt to a specific type of instruction, it provides learning experiences that appeal directly to their strengths, according to Joanne.
And the other thing I will say is sometimes students with disabilities don't present themselves
as typical as other students. Like I have one student, if a professor just didn't know, I mean, he's finished calculus in 10th grade already. But the point is, if you met him, you would think, what can this kid really do? And I think we have to get rid of those stereotypes and things that people think. And a lot of our kids have splinter skills, like they're way above their peers in a lot of things, but sometimes below things. As human beings, we all use our splinter skills. When we have jobs, we take our best skill, right? We utilize it. So it shouldn't be a deficit. It should be we change the education system or to create a new system.
In each of these episodes, the theme is emphasized that we cannot and should not expect people to fit into the system that exists. We need to adapt and change the system to fit others so more people can feel included. The fourth theme falls under the idea of empowerment. So many individuals and organizations discuss the idea of self-advocacy within the disability community and helping individuals to feel empowered in aspects of their daily lives. In many circumstances, this empowerment is also connected to building a community to share and grow with others. For example, in episode 38, we talked to Dr. Rachel Levy from Voice It, a speech recognition app for people who have speech impairments, disabilities, and disorders. It utilizes machine learning to learn a person's unique speech patterns and then helps them communicate with their smart homes or with others. This app can empower people by allowing them to speak and convey their message in their own voice. During our conversation, Dr. Levy said,
"It's really inspiring for me to be able to witness the transformation for people. And like I said earlier, it does require a paradigm shift. And for people to bring in this technology into their life and actually have it change it requires a lot of time and effort on their part to remember, oh, wait, I don't need to rely upon my caregiver for this. I could actually do this on my own. And that sometimes requires the help of therapists. And so VoiceIt is not there to replace the therapist, but rather is a tool for therapists to use to give their clients greater independence and more ownership over their life and their communication.
In the time since our conversation, VoiceIt has had many updates. They currently have a WebEx integration with spontaneous speech recognition and subtitles during video calls. They also have shortcut phrases, where users can say short phrases and VoiceIt will output a longer phrase. And users can interact with ChatGPT using the app now. Dictation can also be edited on the screen using the keyboard, and users can save their notes in dictation mode. Text highlighting has been added when VoiceIt is reading a text, which can help with tracking. Finally, a user's training can be adjusted from the standard 3 to 6 phrases to medium, which is 2 to 4 phrases, and simple, which is for single word sets. If a person wants to make this change, they can reach out to support@voiceit.com to notify the team of the change. Caregivers and therapists can also submit this request. Check the document linked in the show notes for the links and the videos about these new VoiceIt changes. VoiceIt is just one of the organizations working to help users and individuals feel a sense of empowerment and independence. In episode 8, we talked to Happy Valley FitLink, an adaptive fitness program that empowers athletes with leadership opportunities and a chance to build a community. Episode 14 centered on Dr. Becca Monteleone and how she uses storytelling to promote advocacy through sharing individual experiences. Episode 30 focused on parrots that provide technology to empower individuals to live their daily lives more independently. And episode 32 explored NBT inclusion camps and how they teach skills to help participants gain jobs. We also explored empowerment within the arts, including a dance program featuring Dream from the National Dance Institute in episode 19, and the Theater for All program at Queen's Theater in episode 23. Some episodes focused on empowerment within the education sector. For example, episode 9 featured Eye to Eye National and their near-peer mentoring program to give students role models and help them support and advocate for themselves. Episode 11 focused on debugged coding and how they empower students learning computer science. And episode 42 focused on United Sound and allowing students to become chapter leaders while learning an instrument. Episode 28 featured the collaboration between Play Versus and the Special Olympics to create a unified esports team. And Do It in episode 33 empowers individuals through various communities and networks. In episode 15, we talked to Sarah Sandalias, the CEO of the Ability Challenge. This organization partners with schools and districts to create school communities. Through their work, teachers can feel better prepared to meet the unique needs of the learners in their classroom and help empower their students. Also, teachers have the opportunity to feel empowered to make decisions that positively impact students. In this clip, Sarah discusses how the data collected within school districts can be empowering for teachers. In this example, Sarah discusses how teachers can be empowered to make effective decisions for their students.
I'll say two other things about data, which I think we try to underscore quite a bit. One is that data is only as effective as the story that you can tell about the data. In that way, it's really empowering, especially when we work with teachers who oftentimes feel disempowered when they come to us because you own the story. The data is there to support the story you want to tell. In some ways, just reframing the way people are thinking about it is really empowering for folks to say, oh, that's why I'm collecting this data. I'm not collecting this data so I can like check the box that you're making me do this thing. And the other piece of it is that there's a real equity connection that oftentimes motivates people. Real narrative, descriptive data can help you be more equitable in the decisions that you're making. There's really something about having clear processes and using data to support those processes that strikes me as a real opportunity to infuse equity in the work that you're doing.
The idea of empowerment, increasing independence, and self-advocacy run through so many episodes of this show, and it's an important theme to consider. In the time since this interview, the Ability Challenge has broadened their reach and developed new partnerships and new content to support the implementation of anti-ableist practices. Some of their most popular sessions have been developing high-quality IEPs, leading inclusive change management, and implementing a robust continuum of services. They have posted new case studies, tools, insights, and resources to their website, and they are always open to people reaching out and connecting with them. Finally, from these interviews, one of the important takeaways was the importance of continuously learning and growing. The goal of Assembling Inclusion was for all listeners to take away one new thing with each episode. When we know better, we can do better. For many of our interviews, a similar sentiment was expressed. For example, in episode 36, we talked to Brooke Allen from the Diverse Learners Cooperative. This organization works with school teams to support all learners through coaching, connecting, and creating. They provide opportunities for growth through their continued learning offerings, collaboration among educators, and fellowships. When Brooke was creating the organization, she was focused on providing a variety of PD opportunities that included educating both general and special educators. When designing the workshops and training sessions, Brooke said,
"We are trying to think differently about than what PD looks like, thinking about the educator as the learner, and then how do we develop a learner-centered model around professional development. All of our PDs happen in sequence or series. So we do not come in and do a 1 hour session on this or even a 4 hour session on, you know, whatever topic. It's got to have either pre-work, post-work, and accountability, or it's going to happen in series so that we can leave with the next step, come back, reflect on that, and be able to practice what we're learning and what we're trying out differently. So there's definitely cycles of idea, practice it, give feedback, apply it, go actually do it with students or in your classroom or whatever the strategy is, and then come back and let's talk about it. So building in the reflective piece as well. In that way, our PDs, we want to structure like our workshops. We want to structure like we would do for students. We do group work. We do gallery walks. You were likely not going to be sitting for much longer than 20 or 30 minutes because we're going to be doing something. And that's how we would want to teach for children as well. And so we want to incorporate not only the content that we're learning, but the ways in which we know work best for students also work best for educators.
Diverse Learners Cooperative works with educators to provide additional opportunities for their learning and growth, but also allows for co-design for school-specific solutions. Their workshops provide a chance for both general and special educators, as well as administrators, to know and do better within their classrooms. In the time since this episode aired, the Diverse Learners Cooperative has completed a research study on diverse learner-teacher retention, which can be found in the show notes document for this episode. To continue this theme, we have other episodes that showcase the need to continuously learn and grow as listeners so we can be more accessible and inclusive in our daily lives. In episode 37, Travis Davis explains how he spoke about disability in front of a group of students to answer their questions and give them more information about disability. In episode 29, we featured the Learner Variability Navigator and the IEP project from Digital Promise, two tools that provide educators with the opportunity to learn and grow in how they support the learners in their classroom. In episode 31, Kent Strebe talked about enchroma and color vision deficiencies, which personally helped me learn a lot in my understanding of that topic. In episode 39, we talked about TURC's project, InFact, which stands for Including Neurodiversity in Foundational and Applied Computational Thinking. The research done at this nonprofit continuously shows the importance of learning. In episode 24, All Sports, All People discussed how they teach students about adaptive sports, which helps increase their understanding and empathy toward disability. Finally, we had Nobility in episode 45, where we discussed digital accessibility. This episode really showed how we need to continuously grow our own knowledge about what is accessible so we can ensure our content and creations are accessible to everyone. I've learned so much about disability, inclusion, and accessibility from hosting this show. But each episode revealed that there is so much more we need to discover. If you missed any of the episodes from this season and today's recap of an episode piqued your interest, make sure you check them out. I'll put the link to a document with each episode broken down by theme in the show notes. Also, remember that the transcripts for all the shows are listed in the show notes, and they are also available on our website. As we move into the second full year of the podcast, I'm excited to have more conversations with even more people around the world doing the work in disability inclusion. Next week, our new year begins. We've got interviews lined up to end 2023 about new inclusive technology tools, dental care and healthcare, birding, inclusive holidays like Halloween, assistive technology, adaptive and inclusive courses, music, and so many more. I'm excited to share these conversations with you. As always, if you have anyone in mind who you would think would make a great guest, especially as I start recording the episodes going into 2024, please reach out. Our podcast email is assemblinginclusion@gmail.com. That's assemblinginclusion@gmail.com. Thank you so much for spending the past year with us. I hope to share some more perspectives on accessibility and inclusion in this second year, and hopefully we can learn how to be more inclusive in our daily lives, one conversation at a time. Thanks, everyone. Let's keep continuing to learn and grow.